Pretty much the entire state of Iowa is going to freeze overnight tonight. It's a great time to stay warm by thinking about next year's garden. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Jeff Iles, chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be here. We'll talk about lessons learned this year, how to plan for next year, and we want to hear about your greatest garden triumph of the past growing season. And of course, Jeff and Richard will answer your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've got snow in the forecast for much of the state, which makes it the perfect time to start planning for next year's garden. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, is here. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Nice walk across campus this morning.
Yeah, breezy, brisk, bracing.
It was nice. I like this kind of weather.
Well, good for you. Richard Geron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
And, all right, the growing season is officially over.
Tonight.
The hard freeze is coming. I thought this hour, as we talk about planning for next year, we should also hear about people's greatest garden triumphs from this growing season. So if something went really well for you this past summer or fall, give us a call. Tell us about it. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, you can also send your questions as well. And last week, we talked a little bit about garden cleanup and composting the plant waste and things like that. But let's talk about taking a look back and figuring out what we can learn from the growing season we just experienced. Jeff, what do you do this time of year to try to take away some lessons?
Right. Lessons learned. I'm glad we're talking about plants and not my early childhood. I thought that's where we're
next hour.
Okay. Well, it was a challenging year. It was hot and dry for much of the growing season, and that presented some challenges for our woody plants. Watering is something that we always pay attention to. I guess my message now, looking back and looking for the next few weeks, is don't put away the garden hose just yet. If the weather does warm up, well, we do know that root growth occurs even this time of the year, even without foliage, and so you don't want your plants to dry out. I'm not sure what the soil conditions are around the state, but perhaps one or two more waterings might be useful. But
all right, and as cold as it is today and will be tomorrow, we will have probably some above freezing temperatures for the next couple of weeks.
Right. Well, this is a changeable time of the year, but you never know. But watering was one of my major concerns, and of course it kind of caused a lot of trees to and shrubs to go dormant early. A lot of the foliage was kind of scorched and brown, and it fell off prematurely. And it kind of had a dampening effect on fall color. It was still good, but not quite up to our standards. So I do worry about that. And as we prepare for winter, if you've planted newer trees and shrubs in the yard, be careful with those other animals that like to feed on your woody plants. I've got a pretty active deer population in my neighborhood, and so I've taken great pains to use chicken wire, snow fence, whatever I can do to keep deer and rabbits and other animals away. So that would be something I'd be worrying about right now.
And the fact that trees and shrubs, some of them went dormant earlier, does that make them more vulnerable in the winter months?
Oh, I'm not sure they're any more vulnerable to animal predation, but they're opportunists. We have a deer population that walks through my neighborhood every night, and it's like a smorgasbord. They just kind of look at the wares and feed on things as they go by. I'm most worried about the male deer who like to rub their antlers on newly planted trees. And I've seen some damage already being reported around the state. So that's the reason that I like to create a buffer zone where those male deer can't get to the trunks of my trees.
All right. So other lessons learned from this growing season?
You know, It's an old, tired phrase, but using the right plant on the right site. If you use plants that are a little bit marginally hardy or don't do well in full sun, and then you pile on with a hot, dry summer, then they just don't do very well. And so we always learn. I have a brand new yard, and I'm learning things even at my advanced age about what to use and what not to use. But it's the old story of planting things properly, of mulching after the fact, and proper moisture management even after that fact. It's not glamorous. It's not brand new rocket science. But these are hard lessons learned, and I'm afraid a lot of people plant and then they kind of forget what they've done. And towards that end, or to that topic, if you've staked a tree, pay attention to those stakes that you've wrapped around the trunk or the staking materials you've wrapped around the trunk. We sometimes forget that trees grow in diameter and that those materials can begin to girdle into the trunk of the tree, and that's never a good thing either.
Well, and speaking of memory, one of the things that is a big challenge for me as I age is that all the seasons tend to run together. So whatever we did this season and we think, oh, we're not going to do that next season, by next summer, it's all a little bit of a blur. Do you recommend maybe taking some time to write yourself a few notes time of year?
Yeah, especially if it's an insect or disease problem. Insects are great that way because they generally show up right on cue. If you have an insect problem, like Eastern Tent Caterpillar, you can expect to see that in April, and it doesn't vary very much. So, yeah, notes to yourself is a good idea. Where are my keys? When will the insects show up? I think that's always a good idea. And then I look at my yard now because things are kind of bare looking with all the leaves gone, and I think, well, what could I add next year that might pay some dividends? And I think we'd neglect our conifer friends. I'm always pushing for the greater use of conifers in the Iowa landscape. And, of course, some of these plants get large, but some of them don't get that big. And so you might consider where you might use an evergreen, because this time of the year it begins to look kind of drab out there. So don't forget our conifer friends.
Well, and Mark Vitosh isn't here to fight with you about which conifers to plant, but what are your favorites? Because we do have some issues.
I'm sure he'll be calling in. I'm not going to wave a red flag in front of him and recommend Colorado spruce. I know we differ about that one, but I like Serbian spruce. It, obviously not a perfect plant, but I still like it. And there's a couple of pines I've been watching over the years. There's one called Swiss stone pine, which has a great name. And then Korean pine, and these are trees that that don't grow overly fast, but have nice foliage, I think they have a place in the Iowa landscape.
Well, and we talk a lot about the ash trees and how a lot of people planted rows of beautiful ash trees, mm-hmm. and then of course are now going to lose all of those trees. When you think about adding evergreens to the landscape, people do the same thing with evergreens, right? Where they'll plant the same kind of tree because that symmetry is lovely. But do you recommend a little more diversity?
Of course. We use an awful lot of white pine. We do use a lot of Colorado spruce and Norway spruce, and again, you can. There's all kinds of opinions about those plants, but by and large, they do well for us. And so, yes, why not mix and match? Why not use some of these other plants that would lend diversity and visual diversity and just make the landscape more interesting? And the three that I just mentioned, I think, are choice landscape plants. And then there are their dwarf counterparts. It seems like within every species of conifer, we have some dwarf selections that would work well in smaller yards.
This time of year, I also find myself driving around and looking at different things. Or, you know, really all summer, I see a plant that I love and think, oh, that's beautiful. We should plant that. Mm-hmm. And I don't write that down either. And then I forget until I see it again next year. But right now, while you're thinking about next season, while you're making some plans for the garden or for the yard, do you have a recommendation for how to explore a little bit and come up with ideas? How do you like to brainstorm?
Yeah. No, I'm like you. I drive around and I see something I like, or I'm reading a magazine or see a photo come across on my computer, and I think, I'd like to have that in my yard. That's all well and good. You've got to then find a supplier, and that might be the biggest problem. I can name you all kinds of great plants I'd love to see in people's yards, the challenge becomes finding them in garden centers and nurseries. We have good garden centers in the state, but the things that I'm looking for are sometimes a bit hard to find. And so then I ask Richard, where do I find this thing?
And I say, I have no idea.
So send Richard an email, and then he'll tell you where to go to find. When you're also thinking about new plants, we have found that many plants that become trendy over the years then turn out to be invasive, or there turn out to be downsides. What kind of research do you like to do about a plant before you commit to planting it in your yard?
Well, I do trial a lot of my own plants at the Horticulture Research Station, which I know you're very familiar with. But I also pay attention to what my colleagues and counterparts around the country are saying about plants. So I do vet them rather thoroughly, but I've made mistakes. I've planted silly things in my yard that turn out to be bad plants, and I recommended things that it probably shouldn't have. But we, you know, you live and learn. That's what chainsaws are for, I guess. that sounds rather harsh, but we, you know, not every plant that's been released to the nursery trade has been a good plant. Sometimes there are bad ones, but by and large, we have great plants to choose from.
Now, thinking about this year, since I'm asking people about their greatest garden triumphs from the summer, how about you guys? Either one of you have something that you tried this year that worked out for you, or maybe didn't?
Well, you know, and I'll let Richard respond here, but there's this one tree that I've been watching at a local nursery here in town, and I think they had them mislabeled. Anyway, I bought one, and it was still kind of unknown to me, but I planted it. I'm pretty sure it's something called a trident maple, which is a rather unusual maple, and I planted it, and it's still alive, so I'm pretty happy about that.
And you did plenty of watering this long, hot summer?
Yes, ma'am.
Good job. Richard?
I would add, I grew megawatt begonia, a red variety called Devar. They also have pink. You can grow it from seed, but this develops into a 2 to 2.5 foot tall plant, which is quite impressive. It does very, very well in part shade, part sun, and has fairly good drought resistance. So it did very, very well. It grows very slowly initially. You have to wait and wait, but once it starts to grow, it does very, very well.
So is that one that you'll be bringing back next year?
I think so, yes.
And of course, you mentioned drought resistant. You had no idea that that was going to be so important this year.
It was very important, yes, from about mid-June to about mid-September. Very, very dry in much of central Iowa.
And if it had been a wetter summer, do you think you would have had as good an experience with it?
I think so. I think it would prefer a moist soil, but it tolerated the dry conditions pretty well.
All right. Megawatt begonia. Maybe think about that for next year. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions, to find out about your gardening triumphs or landscaping triumphs of the past growing season. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. It's very cold today. The end of the growing season officially tonight as we get a hard frost across the state of Iowa. We will take your questions this hour. We also want to hear about your greatest garden or yard triumphs of this past growing season. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Let's get to the phones. Katie is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hi, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As I was telling your coworker, every year I plant a garden in Dubuque with my mom, and it's always a challenge to find Japanese eggplants. But when we finally found our Japanese eggplant, it is still producing. I think yesterday when we went out to clear out the garden, there was at least six or seven still Wow. And it was crazy. Yeah, they just keep producing well into the fall. And then in addition to that, they went to Hawaii, and I decided to surprise them and have a cantaloupe plant in their garden when they came back. Well, as the plant began producing, we found that it was a yellow squash. And, oh, my goodness, thank God for my coworkers for taking pity on me, because I would have too many yellow squash to count at this point. But those were two successes that we had this year in Iowa that were just fantastic.
So you're counting the summer squash as a success in spite of the fact that you thought it was cantaloupe.
I am. We found a way to use it. We always do. My mom is a vegetarian, so you know we'll count that. We'll count that in the win column.
That's
sure.
Great. That's
indeed.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. So Japanese eggplant and a wonderful summer squash that just produced. I think you know, this time of year, leading up until that hard freeze, Richard, we've talked about making the most out of those last weeks in the garden. But there's so much produce right up until the freeze for a
right.
lot of people.
There can be tomatoes and peppers and squash, definitely, yes. So carrots and beets in the ground, so sure.
Well, and speaking of beets in the ground, we've got a beet question here from Greg. How cold can my Detroit red beets get out in the garden before they're ruined?
Well, I can't give you a specific temperature, but I think they should be fine the next couple nights. It probably will damage the foliage, but the actual roots should be fine. I would plan on getting those out of the ground, I think, by maybe next weekend or so.
All right. So he doesn't have to go out and do it tonight?
Probably not.
Before snow flies.
No.
All right. Elise is on the line in Scranton. Hi, Elise.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. My question may be a little specific. I'm going to be bringing home an 8-foot-tall tree. It's going to be tied down to the top of the van, and I'm afraid the root ball will freeze. Would that be something to worry about?
I'd like to see a picture of this, Elise. This sounds interesting. So what kind of a tree is this?
It's a weeping cherry.
Okay. So
it's a gift, so I have to bring it.
But the root ball, how do you know the size of the root ball?
About 3x4.
Wow. And it's going to be on the roof.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Is
there any other way you can trans? I just worry about its stability. Now, you know, of course you'd worry about the root ball drying out. Not so much worried about the cold temperatures unless you're out there at 3 a.m.
Okay.
But is there any way you can put that inside the van? Put the top in?
We're going to try to do that, but I don't know that we'll be successful.
Yeah, I'm
sure we can tie it down.
Yeah, well. Let's forget about the logistics or the mechanics of tying it down. If you can do it, it wouldn't be my first way to transport a tree like that. Because think about it, you're going down the road at 50-60 miles an hour. That's kind of tough on the top part of the plant too, even though the tree has lost
right.
all of its leaves. So that could be a stress. And again, that's going to be a kind of a challenge to tie it securely. As far as the root system, probably the least of your worries is the low temperatures there. But I as soon as you get it home, I'd get it off and, you know, put it somewhere
sure.
protected.
Get it planted. We plan to have it planted then.
Okay. Just be careful. I want to go on record as saying that's a little out there, putting that thing on the roof.
So,
but I would like to see a picture if you do this.
I mean, she doesn't have.
All right, we can do it.
Right, and she doesn't have a lot of other options. What would you do?
I'm going to show. I'll do it. Where do you live, Elise? where the heck is Scranton?
Oh, west of Ames.
I'm up here in Greene County.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I'm going down to Jefferson County to pick up the tree.
Yeah,
that's a long trip.
Uh-huh. Have a friend.
So you're recommending what, a pickup truck or what are you?
Oh, pickup would be beautiful. I've gotten 8-foot-long trees into my SUV. If I put the top in and maybe curve it around towards the driver's side, I have driven down the road with branches in my face with a root ball at the back of the vehicle.
I've thought of that too.
Yep.
And that may be our first option, but if it doesn't fit, then I thought maybe I could tie it down.
Yeah,
I hope my dog doesn't think it's a big bone.
Well,
the dog has to ride with the tree as well.
the dog's riding with the tree unless it's tied down on top.
Well, listen, Elise, I appreciate your dedication and your willingness to go to any length to bring this tree home. Try to get it inside, though. Try to get it inside that van.
All right. Well, good luck, Elise. That sounds like a big project and a long, slow ride. Let's go back to the phones. Jana is on the line. Hi, Jana.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Not a question. I was going to share a success.
Oh, great.
This year, we were doing some remodeling and had to move the entire vegetable garden in the middle of the year. And so I took great care to move the tomatoes and the peppers and rhubarb and currants and gooseberries. But I also had to move asparagus. So I did my research, and everybody on Google was pretty much going, don't even bother, you're going to kill it. So we moved it anyway. We got a tractor under, and we dumped it in its new location. But I was paying so much attention to my, you know, tomatoes and rhubarb and stuff that I was just like, well, it's going to die anyway. I'll just leave it there. And I didn't water it. And, of course, it was like 100 degrees. And guess what? It's alive and growing and happy, and it's not my success. It's the asparagus's success.
Wow.
It did amazing despite complete and utter neglect.
Well, congratulations. That sounds terrific. What do you think the prospects are for next season, Richard?
I would say I'm one of those skeptics as far as moving it. But I would say at this point that next year I would not do any harvesting whatsoever. Give it a full year to respond, to recover, and see how it does. Hopefully it does do well next year. And if it does, possibly the following year you can harvest.
All right, Jana, good job. Good job with all of the transplanting. That sounds like a major project. Carol's on the line next in Troyville. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, my garden, I tried really hard to think of some triumph, and it was an abysmal disaster, so I have nothing good to report on that. But I want to know, I have been struggling with, I think it's fungus, with my tomato plants, my zucchini, my cucumber. I can't grow a cucumber, a tomato, or a zucchini anymore.
Okay.
And I don't know. I've tried different spots on the garden, and I don't know if the whole garden's just filled. I just went and tore all the stems and roots out, threw them in the river. But is there anything else I can do?
Well, I would clean up the debris because many plant pathogens will survive in the soil on tiny bits of plant debris. So clean up the garden as best you can. And then next spring, plant your vegetable crops in different locations. So where you had your tomatoes, put something, you want to rotate. And actually you want to rotate as best you can, even if it's a small garden. And where you had your tomatoes this year, try not to plant them back in that same location for at least 2 or 3 years. Because
I've rotated them every year.
Right. That's basically
the whole garden. Oh, go ahead.
So you rotate as best you can and try to stay away from that location for a couple of years if you can. You can use fungicides when necessary, but sanitation, crop rotation, they're typically the best means to try to avoid something. But you can use fungicides if necessary.
Okay. And when do you put fungicide on now?
No. Basically, when you're using a fungicide, you apply it to the plant. Basically, what you're doing when you apply it to the plant is you're putting on like a protective covering or coating. And so the pathogen is not able to penetrate that coating and infect the foliage. So in case of tomatoes, for example, what you could do is go ahead, put them at a different location next spring, and maybe around early to mid-June, maybe start to apply a fungicide. And do that on a regular basis through June, July, into August. And at least what that will do is prevent the initial infections and slow it down so that if it does occur later in the year, it's not going to be a major problem. But if you use the fungicide, you have to use something labeled for that vegetable crop. And you also have to do it on a regular basis. Check the label for the specific directions, frequency. And you also have to get complete coverage. In the case of tomatoes, for example, when you're dealing with, for example, Septoria leaf spot, early blight, late blight, you have to apply that to the upper leaf surface and also the lower leaf surface, the entire plant.
Okay.
And so it does require some diligence.
Okay. Sounds wonderful.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck, Carol. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me, Jeff Isles and Richard Giron from Iowa State University. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions or with your garden success stories. We've got a success story next from Jeff in Ankeny. Hi, Jeff. Oh, I think we've lost Jeff there. Let's try next, Tommy in Johnston. Hi, Tommy.
Hi. It's very good to get to you guys. You're going to solve all my problems. I have three pink hydrangea plants, and we moved them from too much sun to a nice shady area. And they've been in this space for about 3 years, but one problem is they don't start blooming till right before fall. They started blooming about 3 weeks ago, and I don't understand it.
Well, it could be the type. Do you know what type it is?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. But should they bloom this late?
Well, some actually bloom quite late in the year. You have your panicle hydrangeas. These are larger shrubs that can get to be 6, 7, 8 feet tall, and they typically start blooming around the state fair time, around mid-August. And they have these conical flower heads that are typically white, but over time they kind of fade to kind of pinkish. And so they can be attractive, they can be attractive into basically early fall.
One quick question.
Okay.
I have a poinsettia that I kept over the summer, big green. I put it in a dark spot. How often do I water it?
Okay. Well, let's go back to that a little bit later. We can go back to that later. But as far as the hydrangea that you have, how big a plant is it?
It's about no more than 4 feet tall with a spread of about 3 feet.
Okay.
This small.
And
it's a big round ball bloom.
Okay. Does it have big leaves that are dark green in color?
Yes.
Okay. I'm thinking what you have is a big leaf hydrangea, which don't get nearly as big. And they can have flowers that are either blue or pink, depending on the soil acidity or pH. And most of those new varieties, they will bloom on both new wood and old wood. So in Iowa, though, sometimes, if we have a severe winter, the previous year's growth does not survive the winter. So they're not going to bloom in early summer like they would if that would survive the winter. So they will bloom in late summer, early fall on their current year's growth. So if we have a hard winter, they're not going to bloom basically until maybe September, late August, September. What you can maybe do on that is if you want to try to save that current wood is maybe take some soil and mound that around the base so maybe it might survive better the winter and then remove that next spring. And maybe you'll get some bloom in early summer on this year's growth. As far as the poinsettias, they need complete darkness from basically 5 p.m. until 8 a.m. each day. But from 8 a.m. to 5, they should be in a sunny window. And you need to do this every day for basically 8 straight weeks, every day.
So you have to start now if
you
want
to start
them for Christmas,
now.
Right?
You have to start now and do it every day for 8 straight weeks. You could put it in a closet in the late afternoon, take it out in the morning, or you might just cover it with a box and just take it off and on. But it has to be done every single day for 8 straight weeks. And actually, to get it to flower by Christmas, you have to start this typically in early October. So at this point, it may be late December, early January before it colors.
All right, and it's like having an incredibly unresponsive pet. You need to take care of it at least twice a day.
It's very demanding, yes.
And it's not going to give you anything back for at least 8 weeks.
Right.
All right. Well, good luck with that and both your hydrangea and your poinsettia, Tommy. Let's see if we can get another call in. Jean in Des Moines. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. I have a shingle oak. We have a shingle oak that is way too close to the house. It's a volunteer. and I'd love to be able to move it. I'd like an estimate. I think you do a foot per inch of diameter in the of the trunk. Is that right?
So,
for transporting it, and then, but I want to know how many people it would take to move that root ball.
So
any idea?
Can you give me an idea of the size of the tree, Gene? Is it height and
the diameter? 12 inches up is just shy of 2 inches.
Okay, 2-inch tree. Okay, what about 6 inches up? From the ground.
About the same.
So 2 inches.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing a root ball of about 24 inches across and maybe 18 to 24 inches deep. So that's it's a rather large root ball, and they're heavy. And so it might take two or three people to move that. The other issue, of course, is digging that tree. And
yes.
It takes a little bit of skill to dig a root ball and then wrap it with burlap and get it out of the hole without the whole thing falling apart on you. So do you have enough room to do this operation? How close is it to the foundation?
No, it's about 3-4 feet
okay.
from the foundation.
Okay. Well, good size tree. You could do this yourself, or you might see if someone could do it for you. I guess the major issue is digging that root ball and making sure that as you do it, it doesn't fall apart. And then, of course, the critical part of digging a tree like that is severing the roots below the root ball. That's where the rubber meets the road. So good luck with that one. But it's heavy.
All right, Gene, definitely a team project there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Jeff Iles is here, professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, ISU Extension horticulture specialist. I'm seeing reports of flurries around the state. Waverly, Cedar Falls, Mitchellville. The growing season has ended officially. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We are looking ahead to next year. We're celebrating the triumphs from last summer. You are welcome to join our conversation with your success stories or your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist, and let's go to Steve in Mason City. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Charity. This is a follow-up to a call that I made several weeks ago about a butterfly bush that was decimated right near the ground and my attempt at rooting it. It shot in the dark. I had no idea what I was doing, but
right.
I chopped
and I remember
up in
some
small...
some skepticism about the future of that butterfly bush when you called.
I think my success was due to cutting it up in small pieces, none bigger than 1.5 inches. I put it in a terrarium, first layer sand, potting soil, Miracle-Gro fertilizer, and then saran wrap over the top to keep it moist while it was in a sunny area. And it did take a long time before I started seeing new growth. But now I have about 12 to 15 new little plants, some of them already beginning to flower. And I don't think it was probably due to the carbon dioxide.
Probably not, no.
Oh, and I emailed you, or texted a photo of the success.
Oh, nice.
Days ago.
So now
so that's all.
Right. What does Steve need to do to keep these little shoots
right.
alive through
the
challenge winter?
The challenge is not over at this point. Now, basically, once they have a root system, I would pot them up in potting soil and probably treat them as a house plant, put them in a sunny window, water them when the soil dries out, and basically do that through basically much of the winter.
All right. Well, Steve, I hope we get a further success story from you in the spring as well. Dinah's on the line next in Ames. Hi, Dinah.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to report both a success and a caution. We had great luck this year with a Sweet Success cucumber. It's an English-style cucumber, and it just, I had to water them because of the drought, but they just produced and produced and produced. And we finally just had it give up the ghost about a week and a half ago.
Nice.
And it's a very tasty cucumber. I was sent the seeds by a company several years ago and have been growing it ever since. I really like it. The caution is, and I don't think I heard you talk about it, the woman who wanted to transport the tree on top of her car, with the size of the root ball she's talking about, I would caution her that it might do nasty things to the top of the car as well.
Yeah, we didn't explore that.
We were worried mostly about the tree.
Yeah.
We have other priorities.
I would worry about the car as well.
Yeah, we should have been stronger in our comments, I guess. Elise, please don't do that.
And I know someone who tried transporting something heavy on top of a car, and the roof did not like it.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
Words of warning. Dinah, thank you so much for your call. Next up, we've got Ruth on the line in Carroll. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Charity. I thought I was going to have a success story to tell you, but it turned into another failure.
A learning experience, another learning experience.
I guess it's about my garden phlox, which have been very poor at blooming the last several years. They do have very tiny insects on them. They're about an eighth of an inch long. They are black in the center and orange on either side. I took one of them to the garden center, and they couldn't even identify it from their chart of insects. But they thought possibly it could be due to a fungus. So in the past, I have sprayed it for insects. So this year, I sprayed it for both insects and fungus, but it didn't work. They don't grow to the height they should be. The heads looked like they were full of buds, but the buds never bloomed. And the strange thing is that there are some volunteer phlox along a fence, and they bloom just fine.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly why those plants are not blooming now. Garden phlox does prefer full sun. So the site should receive at least 6 hours of direct sun per day. It likes a fertile, well-drained soil. Powdery and mildew can be a fairly common problem on those plants. That affects the foliage. It really shouldn't affect the bloom that much, but it will affect the foliage, where the foliage will kind of dry up and turn brown. If you have a plant that is simply not producing, and if it has favorable growing conditions, I would be inclined to dig it up and toss it and buy some new plants, because I don't think it's the insects doing it. I think you may have basically a dud that's just not going to perform like it should, and I would cut the cord and basically get rid of it and start over.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
There are some very good cultivars out there, for example, that are mildew resistant. David is a very common one where it has a very bright white flower, and it has very good mildew resistance. So if you're looking for some new varieties, make sure they're mildew resistant. Put them in full sun, a well-drained soil. This should be fine.
All right. Good luck and better luck next time, Ruth. Let's go to Mike in Ames. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call, TGI Hort Day.
Absolutely. What's your question?
I'm calling in because when I was a very small child, my grandmother and grandfather had several large plots on their land with Scotch pine, and Scotch pine kind of went the way of the ash. There was a blight going around, and it took out almost all of them. We still have one that is alive, but barely. It looks very sickly. Earlier, you guys had been discussing making more use of conifers, and I was wondering, is Scotch pine a safe tree to plant in moderation, or is it best to avoid it and go with other conifers?
Oh, Mike, I think there probably are some other conifers you should use. I mean, you could plant one and baby it along, and who knows, you might avoid pine wilt, which was the biotic thing that took it down. So I still see one or two nice specimens around, and they're usually on very preferred favored sites. I think what started the ball rolling downhill for Scotch pine was we planted so many on difficult sites And it seems like drought stress and any stress seem to push them over the edge. The pine wilt problem would find them. So, you know, I hate to say, no more, but I wouldn't bet the farm on them. So I just think there are too many other good plants out there, too many other good pines out there that you might investigate. The two that I mentioned, Korean pine and Swiss stone pine, being among two really good ones.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little stubborn, so I like to take risks, but at the same time, I don't like to waste time or money, so I wanted to check.
Yeah, I don't want to waste your money either.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call, and let's get to some emails here. This one's from Sam. He says, this past spring, none of my seeds that were left over from the prior year germinated. I've used older seeds before with good luck. These were stored indoors. It's somewhat puzzling to me. Can you give me your best advice as to how to store seeds over the winter and whether you should even try?
Oh, I would. Most of your flower seed, most of your vegetable seeds, most of them will survive at least 2 years, some 3 to 4 years. Basically, what I do is I just keep them in their original packet, and I put them in a cool, dry place. It could be a cupboard, but cooled and dry, and they should be fine. But you should use them typically, if you can, by the next year. But just make sure they're cool and dry. They should be fine.
And will you have less success with two-year-old seeds than you would, or one-year-old seeds than you would with seeds from the previous season?
Right. If you have current seed, you may have like a 95% germination rate. The next year, it might be 85%. Okay. That's okay. And the following year might be, let's say, maybe 60, 50%. So the viability will go down over time, but usually they're good for at least another year.
All right. Here's a question from Barb. She says, I put 3 amaryllis bulbs outside this spring. They were in pots all summer, and one bloomed again. The other two didn't. They all grew leaves about 2 feet long. I brought them into the house last night. Can I make them bloom again?
You should be able to, hopefully. What I would do is put them in a cool place, kind of darkly lit, not very bright. And I would actually place the plants on their side. So I'd lay them down, and I would stop watering completely. And you're basically forcing them to go dormant. It's going to take a few weeks, but eventually the leaves will dry up and turn brown. And so now the bulb is basically dormant. You can cut off that dead foliage. And then for basically 8 weeks, that bulb needs a temperature of 50 to 55 degrees. And that's for basically flower induction. Without those temperatures, if it's too warm, they're not going to basically develop a flower bud. So they need to stay there for basically 8 weeks. If you have maybe a cool porch, maybe an unused bedroom that's on the cool side, put it there. And then after that cool period, then bring it back to a warmer area, start to water, and within a few weeks it should start to grow and hopefully have some flowers.
All right. Here is a question from Virginia. She said, I also saw the effects of lack of moisture on my garden this year. If we're looking at irregular moisture patterns with the onset of climate change, do you recommend drip irrigation for backyard gardeners, and which vegetables would benefit the most?
You can use drip irrigation. I typically like mulching. Mulching is very, very useful, very easy to do. You can use grass clippings. They're readily available. So if you have a lawnmower with a bag on it, you can cut your lawn. You can use those grass clippings. You can use shredded leaves. And if you put on like 2 or 3 inches, it does a very, very good job of actually conserving moisture. Bare ground dries out very quickly on a warm, sunny, windy day. If you have a nice mulch layer, it helps conserve that moisture. So I would really look at the mulches.
All right. Where Linda Knave would say drip irrigation,
yes,
I think.
Yes, probably.
Right?
She tends to be more commercial. But
all right. She also wants to say, my greatest successes this past year were my smaller Thumbelina zinnias, bushier plants with many more flowers. I also saw an increase in pollinators visiting them. This one's from Tyler. He says, I redid my front yard and put in a few boxwoods and a butterfly bush. I emailed you a picture a while back about the butterfly bush possibly dying in its spot, but it's really flourished since I planted it. Many painted lady butterflies also loved it this year. Also, I tried putting new grass in my backyard again, and it's come in well. So a couple of great success stories. But he does have a question about the grass. He says the new grass is growing much faster than my other established grass and tends to be much wetter. It clogs up my mower, and I have to scrape wet grass out of the mower deck. Is that common for new grass?
Well, it may grow very quickly, and my suggestion would be to mow often. It doesn't hurt to mow often, and I would try to mow basically probably in mid to late afternoon when it should be driest at that time of day. So mow often, mow fairly, probably around 3 inches, but mow often and do it in the late afternoon.
All right, another success story. This one's from Barb in Ankeny. Our pole beans were a great success for us this year. In previous years, animal pressure on our vegetable garden made growing beans pretty much impossible. My husband insisted we tried again, so this year we built a double fence along the inside of our garden fence. It was 6.5 feet tall and about 2 feet wide and probably 15 to 20 feet long. I still wasn't sure it would work, but we optimistically planted 2 packs of pole bean seed in between them. My husband strung twine from the bottom to the top of the fencing for the plants to climb, and then we also wrapped the entire lower part of the fence with chicken wire. It was a lot of trouble to go through, but hooray, success. So she's got a lot of beans.
That's good.
That's fantastic. Sometimes you just got to put in the work, right?
Yes, you do.
All right. Let's see if we can fit in one more call here. Let's go to Mark in Dubuque. Hi, Mark.
Yes.
What's your question?
Yes, hello. Yes, I have a 3-year-old oak sapling that was planted from an acorn that the deers nipped off the growing shoot earlier this year. There's 3 shoots coming from where the original terminal bud was, and I'm wondering if I should pick the best one and clip the other 2, and if there's any hope for this to form into a regular tree over the course of its lifetime, or should I just start over?
No, there's always hope, Mark. And what you've got there is a small tree with a bright future. I think what you've described or what you've suggested is a good idea, but I might let that tree grow a little bit. It needs all the carbohydrates that it can manufacture, and so any excess pruning now might set it back. I'd let it go for a year or two and see what develops. Of course, you want to develop a central leader and make sure the other 2 don't outgrow it. But I let it grow a couple years before I start getting too serious with pruning. And of course, we always prune oaks during the dormant season.
Yes. All right. Well, very good. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Mark. And here's our final email. This one's from Sonia. She says, I have kept a weekly diary for the garden for more than 10 years. I used Garden Diary by Rosemary Vary. I've had trouble finding such a simple week-by-week diary, as the diaries I've found demand far more note-taking than I have time for. Do you have any suggestions?
Boy, not offhand. We're looking at each other.
Let's see. You can't go to the card store. What about an iPad?
So, maybe an electronic.
Yeah.
An app would probably not have as much room for writing, or you could leave a lot of it blank.
You could.
But that's impressive dedication.
That
10
is.
Years of garden diary keeping.
That'd be
very
worth publishing. That might be interesting to review.
Absolutely. Maybe you make your own.
It's true. I like that. Parchment.
All right.
You stumped us again, Charity.
All right. Well, she also wanted to say that she has also been picking Roma tomatoes for weeks, and she'll pick the last ones today as the snow begins to fly around the state. Well, Jeff Iles, thank you so much for being here.
Charity, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Richard Duran, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. In spite of the snow, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Robbie Broad. You can get in touch with us anytime. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.